Hi, I'm Molly Wonsall.
And I'm Geoffrey Wonsall.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we've been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
Which is what prompted us to start this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wonsall and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wonsall.
Hello everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for keeping us going so very kindly. You know, we get wonderful correspondence. It's fascinating. And we're lucky to say more and more listeners.
Yeah, tell your friends.
Please do tell your friends. But we are getting more and more. And that's really very, very encouraging. And we owe a lot of people a lot of thanks as we try and thank them every time. It is a privilege to be able to do this podcast. And I was reading a piece this week in which someone said about podcasts, they'd gone from unlistenable to unmissable. And I certainly feel that about this podcast.
There are some very good podcasts out there.
Well, this was your idea.
It was my idea, yeah.
Certainly was.
All I've done is make more work for you.
Yes, but on the other hand, I wouldn't want to be quiet. I like working, as you know.
I like being busy.
I like being busy. And among the things that's been busying me this week is that I'm going to be reviewing the new John Grisham. And that is very interesting. It's called The Guardians.
The Guardian. Did you not talk about this before?
I don't think I may have done.
I can't remember because I remember you doing a correction on a podcast.
No, that
recently.
Was the Institute, not the Institution.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, this is interesting because Grisham, apart from being one of the richest writers in America,
He's rich because he's successful.
He's very, very successful. But he actually started something called the Innocence Project, which has to date secured through DNA testing the release of 349 innocent men and women.
That's interesting. I've listened to podcasts about the Innocence Project before.
20 of whom had been on death row. His non-fiction book about that project, The Innocent Man, about two wrongful convictions in the 1980s, is now about to be a six-part series on Netflix.
Oh, interesting.
All I would say, and I'm not going to give anything away about the plot, but it is about undoing a wrong, which is very compelling.
Has it released yet?
It comes out formally in the middle of October.
Mm. Pre-order on Amazon?
Yes, I'm sure. Most of the Grishams find their way into the shops a little earlier than their official publication date because there's always such a demand for them.
Yeah, I bet.
Like John le Carré. I've also got the new John le Carré, which I'm just finishing. Mm-hmm. You know, they've snapped out literally off the shelves. And Grisham is one heck of a writer too.
Yeah.
Ken Follett, a British writer, calls him the best thriller writer alive. And it's sometimes hard to disagree with him.
Cool.
Or can be a bit ponderous at sometimes in the middle books, but it's rather better now.
That's no segue.
I'm not suggesting for one moment that John Wayne Gacy is anything but a guilty sin.
Okay, yeah. I think that's fair.
So we are returning to part two.
Part two of John Wayne Gacy.
Also known as the Killer Clown. In the end of 1977, in the wake of this ferocious killing spree, Gacy decides on a reunion, a reconciliation with Carol, the second wife. I've always thought that he did that because he wanted to appear respectable again. He was a bit worried that this lone, rather overweight man, although he was very respectable and much loved and all of the above, might have needed a wife
People must have suspected something by this point, surely.
Well, I would be a little surprised.
I mean, how is he taking these men into his house in the cover of darkness, or...?
Often under cover of darkness, yes.
You'd have to.
Well, there's no real alternative, is there? Anyway, he let's just pick up the story. There's a reconciliation, sort of reconciliation, with Carol towards the end of 1977. And in 1978, he's beginning to run out of space under the house. In February 1978, he kills William Kindred, a 19-year-old, and sticks it in a crawl space. But the next four victims are known as the Duplains River victims. Basically, he's run out of space. And so now he throws them in the river.
So he's putting himself in the way of being caught more now because the bodies are out.
Yes. And the whole thing begins to unravel around March 1978 when he makes a mistake. He lures a 26-year-old called Jeffrey Brignall into his car, chloroforms him, once again, drugs or alcohol, it's always something, chloroforms him, drives him back to his house where he's raped and tortured. And then, for a reason I've never quite understood, he drives Brignall to a park, Lincoln Park, where he's dumped alive. The local police, don't investigate Gacy, but Brignall remembers Gacy's distinctive Oldsmobile car. One of the ways in which Gacy trapped victims was to use a very specific, very bright spotlight into their eyes to blind them effectively and to make them easier to control. And it was a very distinctive car. And to be fair, obviously traumatised by this experience at Gacy's hands, Brignall decides that he'll stake out the local expressway because he knew where he was given a lift, and see if he can find the Oldsmobile. And believe it or not, he does. He sees it, and he tells the police. And indeed, he follows it to Gacy's house, 8213. Police issue an arrest warrant, and Gacy is arrested on the 15th of July. That arrest warrant was still in place when he killed the four Duplain River victims. The first...
You mean he'd been taken into...
No, he wasn't taken into custody.
So what's an arrest warrant?
Well, it simply means that you will have to stand trial at some point for...
Oh, for the rape and torture of the 26-year-old victim.
Remember, Gacy is an upright member of the local community.
That's so weird. So then he's got that, but then he goes on to murder four more young men.
Absolutely right. In June, he kills Timothy O'Rourke, who's 20, and chucks the body in the river. In November, he kills Frank Landing Inn, 19-year-old, chucks him in the river. In November, he chucks James Mazzara, 20-year-old, into the river. And the case, the single killing that was to bring an end to Gacy's murderous career was a young man called Robert Piest, P-I-E-S-T, who was 15. Piest was the last of the victims to be thrown into the river. He threw them from a bridge on the road I-55. He said later that he threw five bodies over the bridge, but only four were ever recovered. But it was the disappearance of Robert Piest that was finally to bring him to justice. He disappeared on the 11th of December 1978. The thing was, by this point, that gradually it began to emerge, and no criticism is involved of the local police, the pattern of disappearances begin to come to the surface. And then there's the question of Rignall's charge, you know, attack. And they decide, finally, to get a search warrant for Gacy's house. It was that search warrant that was in the end to be Gacy's downfall. Because, of course, they began to find all kinds of material in Gacy's house, not just handcuffs and ropes, all sorts of other assorted paraphernalia for a man who has a taste for sadomasochism. But of course, just as happened in this country with serial killers, happened in America, Gacy groomed the local police. That's when the famous phrase, "You know, clowns can get away with murder," was first used. Gacy was so confident and so sure of himself that he never for one moment thought that anyone would truly suspect him. Certainly never thought that they would perhaps dig up his house. Well, for once, Gacy was proved completely wrong. But the thing about Gacy was that he played it to the absolute limit. At one point in December, soon after the Rignall, soon after the suspicions begin to accrete around him, he issues a civil suit against the Plains police for suggesting that he was guilty of anything.
Is this before or after they've dug up all the bodies underneath? Okay.
Okay. And it was while they were compiling evidence that they got the second search warrant. And on December the 20th, 1978, Gacy confessed to Peast's murder to his own lawyer. Privileged information, of course, wasn't a confession to
Peast
the police.
Peast was the last one thrown off the bridge.
That's right, the last one thrown off the I-55 bridge. "I've been judge, jury and executor, an executioner of many, many people," he told his lawyer. "I killed 30 people, give or take a few," he said on December the 21st. And the search warrant to search for Peast in the crawl space underneath his house resulted in not the discovery of Peast, who was eventually discovered on the in the river, but the discovery of the bodies under the house. I think someone, one of the first policemen on the scene who got into the crawl space, it's different. It's slightly different. American houses are built in a slightly different way.
Yeah, yeah.
There is an open...
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And
surely they all smelt, though.
Well, he put quicklime on them.
Oh, okay.
Try and make sure the body's dissolved. Yeah. He
it
also concreted
like
over
a,
one or two of them.
Must have been like a...
Well, what can you say?
Mass grave.
One of the first police officers to crawl under the house said memorably, "There are a lot of young men under here." Never has a truer word been spoken. On December the 22nd, 1978, Gacy confesses to the police to, as he puts it, clear the air. He told them at some length about, oh, the false sheriff's badge he had and the spotlight on the back, on the top of his car. He lured and conned boys into his car. He told them about the handcuffs and the rope trick and the wooden plank. Indeed, he told them that he often kept the bodies under his bed for the first 24 hours. That hint of necrophilia, which is part, runs through this story, that hint of all that time back to when he was working in the mortuary in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
There's that. There is a fascination with that death. I mean, he watched each and every one of those young men die. I'm sure he took an absolute delight in it. This is a truly monstrous individual. Absolutely psychopathic. He has no conscience. He has no empathy. He is interested only in his own self-satisfaction. He is a sexual predator of the worst possible kind. And he's killed, well, at least 30. He said maybe 45 at one point in the confession. they managed to find and identify 29 of the victims.
Mm.
But some of the others weren't. A man who, well, certainly knew no shame. 26 young men were in the crawl space. 3 others were buried elsewhere, one under the garage. And the 4 last victims were dumped in the Des Plaines River. He was convicted, eventually, of 33 murders. At his trial, which began in February 1980, Gacy attempted to convince the jury that he had multiple personality disorder and or erotic asphyxia. In other words, he got some huge sexual satisfaction from asphyxiating or strangling his victims.
That's probably true.
Well, it may well have been true. The jury debated for less than 2 hours and convicted him in March.
Did he get the death penalty?
March 13, 1980. And he was sentenced to death. He was to survive on death row for 14 years.
Lordy.
A lot of people have survived longer.
Mm.
But he nevertheless, he survived. He appealed on multiple occasions.
Appealed?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
What did he do? What was he going to say? All the bodies just got under his house by accident.
Yes, it must have been somebody else. Remember that famous one we talked about Crippin, not long ago? He at one stage tried to maintain that it was the previous owner.
Oh.
Who buried the bodies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Trouble
classic.
Is the timeline didn't work.
No, because, yeah.
Absolutely extraordinary to the last, in May 1992, after 12 years on death row, he gives an interview to CBS News.
What, a filmed one?
Yep, claiming he was innocent.
Oh, my word.
Yes. I mean, some of the footage is absolutely fascinating. I mean, you've been convicted of killing 33 young men, and you've got the extraordinary chutzpah to appear on CBS saying, no, it's all a mistake, I'm innocent. I don't think he was in denial. I think he was trying to fool everybody. He was also trying to get out of the death sentence.
Well, he's just trying to get attention.
Yeah. I mean, one of his prosecutors at the trial in 1980 called him a ruthless and sadistic killing machine. And I think that's a perfectly fair description of Gacy.
Yeah, he definitely was a killing machine. It's not easy to kill that many people.
It's not at all easy. It is.
Other than the angels of death, what are the highest numbers for actual...
Well,
he's pretty high.
He's high.
He's high.
Yeah, they're high. There's a couple of done 80 killings in America. Yeah.
But the actual practicality of it, getting away with it for that long and dealing with it, I know I always go back to logistics, but
yeah,
I mean, outside of the actual horror of it. And
well, Harold Shipman
element.
Probably killed more.
Yeah, I know, but I just said that angels of death don't really count.
No.
You know, when you're in a position where people are coming to you and you can inject them with something that can kill, you know, the doctors and nurses are always going to have the highest numbers.
Yeah.
As opposed to those people who have to find victims and take them somewhere and dispose of them.
Yeah.
That's always...
It is an extraordinary... I mean, it's a period of only basically 6 years. He's killed 33.
It's a lot of killing.
It is an awful lot of killing. I mean, he abducts boys at bus stops at gunpoint. I mean, he's completely out of control.
Frenzy.
He's in a frenzy. It is, I mean, I think but for the fact that he eventually confessed, it would have taken some time and some pretty sophisticated forensic evidence.
Perhaps he didn't want to kill that older victim.
The one he dumped in the park, who went looking
Being
for his car.
Being 26.
Yeah, could have been.
That's slightly outside of his normal MO. Or maybe he wanted to get caught.
At the end?
Yeah. Do you think that happens, that people get to the point where they're just like, this is too much, like the weight of it is all just too much?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's...
Can't be. This is all sounds ridiculous, but it must just get to the point where, like, I don't know if you know, you can't handle doing it anymore.
Well, I'd like to think that, but I always then remember the details of Gacy's execution. In the morning of May the 9th, 1994, he was transferred to the Stateville Correctional Centre to be executed, and that afternoon was allowed a private picnic in the prison grounds with his family. For his last meal, he ordered a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken, a dozen fried shrimp, French fries, strawberries, and a Diet Coke.
Gosh.
And that evening, he observed prayer with a Catholic priest before being escorted to the execution chamber to receive a lethal injection. His last words were memorable. "Kiss my ass."
Oh.
And so...
doesn't care, does he?
Finally, at 12:58 a.m. in the early hours of May the 10th, 1994, Gacy was dead. He was 52.
Lethal injection does not kill you quickly.
No. And indeed, on a couple of occasions, it's proven not to kill you at all.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah, I learned a lot about it on that podcast I spoke about before, about those people that work for Reprieve. Like, the first part of it just paralyzes you, and then the second part of it kills you, but you're, like, paralyzed and, like, in horrible pain.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying there should be a good way of killing someone, but lethal injection does not sound to me like the one.
Well, it's also a lot of debate about who's providing the fluid, aren't there?
Yeah.
The drugs. But I think one thing I would say by way of Gacy is that Gacy has entered into the folklore of serial killers in America. Not perhaps as much as Manson has. Although Manson, you will remember, didn't actually kill anybody himself.
Mm, yeah.
Gacy killed every one of these victims himself. Up close and personal. There can be no more intimate way than strangling or asphyxiating.
He definitely is in the folklore of American serial killers.
So, I think along with a handful of others, Dahmer, Bundy, this is an iconic American serial killer, and has been, I mean, countless fictional evocations of him. There was all sorts of was he responsible for other killings? He insisted at one point that he hadn't been acting alone, but I don't think that was ever proven. But there's 12 books about him.
Did he ever write a book when he was in prison?
No, he didn't. Just the television interview.
Okay.
He's been in this made-for-TV film, To Catch a Killer, based on the disappearance of Robert Peast. A feature film released in 2003. Made-for-TV film called Dear Mr. Gacy in 2010 with Bill Forsyth as Gacy. And the horror film 8213, which was Gacy House, was released in 2010 based on paranormal investigators spending a night built in on the
That sounds rubbish.
I'm not saying I'm just saying he has entered into American folklore.
True.
The victim that went in search of the Oldsmobile, Jeffrey Rignall, wrote a book called 29 Below about the victims.
God, really?
Yes. And Gacy, at one point, and I'm sorry contradicting myself here, darling, he did actually write a book himself called A Question of Doubt, the John Wayne Gacy story.
Yeah, I thought he probably would have done.
A lot of people have talked about Gacy. But anyway, I think that's enough gloom.
There we go. Thank you very much, John Wayne Gacy.
Tell me something cheerful, Mo. What were you doing cheerful?
Cheerful? What am I doing that's cheerful? I mean, I've got over the run of press nights and premieres.
Oh, that's good. You mean you've got an evening to yourself now and again?
Yeah. Crikey. A few more, which is nice. I went to see Tom Mothersdale in the Carol Churchill plays.
At the Royal Court?
Yes.
Good?
Yeah. They were good. It was three short plays.
Mm-hmm.
Tom's in two of them. One of which is basically him giving a monologue. And the other one he's in with Toby Jones and Deborah Finley. I love Toby Jones.
Well, I think we all do.
He's a Brillo. Yeah, you know
I
what?
I first saw Toby Jones in the play What I Wrote.
Did you?
Yes. When he was still doing, what's it, that theatre of comedy.
You know. Like Footlights? No.
It had a very specific name.
Oh,
that's the first time I ever saw him.
He's great.
Yeah.
What is the name of that Matteo Garrone movie that Stacey was in? It's like all these Italian, like, folk tales adapted, and Toby Jones plays a part in one of those where his daughter turns into a giant snail. Oh. Sounds really weird, but it's actually really cool. yeah, anyway, I'm not really, no, I'm Carol Churchill's not like my general bat. Mm. Like, I just get confused.
Yeah.
I think the first one was ornaments on a mantelpiece all talking to each other.
I've never quite got Carol Churchill. I've been going to them for ages.
Yeah.
I can remember sitting in the Royal Court looking at a Carol Churchill play saying, will this ever end?
She was there.
I'm sure
she was.
She's
quite punchy.
Mm.
She's like 80 or something.
Oh, yeah, she's a considerable age now.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly.
Pretty impressive.
It's very impressive.
She?
And she has a considerable body of work, to be
God,
fair.
God, yeah, major. So, yes, that was that, really. I haven't got much other news. I've just been working and... going to plays and screenings and stuff.
I'm just preparing endless murder cases. I've got 10 cases for next series of Murder by the Sea, and I've got another 2 cases for...
You shall be glad for your holiday when you get to it.
Britain's Most Evil Killers, or the world's most evil killers. I don't know
just,
which one.
Just more evil killers.
More evil killers.
Oh, didn't we get... When is your Britain's Most Evil Killers? We got a TX card.
Yes.
Now I can't remember the details.
I can. It opens, the series begins on October the 1st on Sky Crime, the new crime channel. Now, if anything underlines just how significant true crime has become.
There are so many true crime channels, aren't there? And
crime and investigation.
Ones, yeah. Alibi.
Yeah, but there you go. Sky are devoting a whole
channel
to
crime.
A man said to me the other day, I was collecting my shirts from the laundry, and he said, "It's unbelievable." And I said, I seem to have stumbled into a bandwagon. I don't quite know how I found it, but there it is. And I'm not complaining. I'm fascinated by it all. And I really enjoy doing the podcast as well as the movies and things. But
and the appetite for true crime is...
Yes. And it is astonishing, as I said to you, how many people say to me, "Oh, I saw you talking about that horrible man last night or last week." Or it's quite astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the most unlikely places. Well, Mol, let's say thank you. And
thank you to you, Jeffrey Wansell, for telling us the stories. And thank you to our producer, Poppy Damon. Thank you to my brother, Dan, for making all the music. And my friend, George, who drew our caricature. Thank you to Audio Boom for hosting us and looking after us so graciously and kindly. And thank you to my friend and colleague, Hannah, who helps me with All Things Podcast.
Thank you all. Thank you so much for listening. And as I say always, do be careful out there.